Hello, our wonderful, wonderful audience. This is Dr. Peter Breggin, and the show is the Breggin Hour now, Ginger.
The Breggin Hour with Dr. Peter Breggin and Ginger Breggin. And I always say, hi, folks.
And Ginger's participating more and more as appropriate and planned. And it's certainly making the hour a bit more interesting.
Thank you.
For sure.
So today we've got Alex Newman with us again. I had to call Alex this morning and see if he could jump on to do a show with us because we all just caught portions of Trump's presentation to his address to the General Assembly at the United Nations. And this is the first time in 6 years that he's done an address again. So the last time was 2019. And boy, it was a barn burner this morning. And Alex, of course, was right on top of it and delighted to come in and give us some details that the legacy media will probably miss. Hi, Alex.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you guys so much for having me.
We were hoping you would actually have been there, but on this one occasion, you were not at the center of globalism, as you so often are. Were you napping?
I wish. No, I had an event in Texas that I had to be at that I had been committed to, and I've got to head to Virginia tomorrow. So just no time, unfortunately, to make it this year. But I was there last year for the General Assembly and also for the Summit of the Future. And I am going to the UN Climate Summit in November, which obviously climate was a major, major focus of Donald Trump's speech at the UN General Assembly. He actually called it the biggest con in the history of humanity. So that was interesting.
And a hoax. He called it a hoax.
Yep. And he warned that the countries that didn't stop with this foolishness were going to fail. And of course, he's exactly right.
And he also focused on immigration, and he charged the UN with paying for the open borders and supporting people in coming to the US, which he was very highly critical of, and basically accused the UN of trying to destroy the United States by doing that.
Yep, and the entire Western world. Yep, and he's exactly right. We have been sounding the alarm about this. I've written numerous articles in the New American. I actually helped with the Epic Times. They made a documentary about this. Like, literally, the UN was paying for and facilitating this mass invasion of the United States and Western countries broadly. And this is the first time we've seen it called out like that. I mean, Trump has referenced it here and there. The Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, has talked about this. In fact, I was at his office a few years ago. I spent half an hour interviewing their Secretary of State, and he did point out that the UN was involved in this and that the goal was to undermine the nation state and undermine the Christian culture that existed in Europe to try to create a United States of Europe and then a one world system. But very few people have had the courage to say what Donald Trump just said, even though it is absolutely obvious to anyone who looks.
He pointed out in his speech the percentages of the prison populations in some of those countries that are illegal immigrants. They call them migrants in Europe, and a number of them are well above 50%. And I think that he said it was Switzerland was over 70% of the jailed inmate population were illegal immigrants rather than citizens of Switzerland. But and that is in itself a way to just drain and bleed a country to death, is to completely flood them with individuals who are unable or completely unwilling to assimilate, abide by the laws of the land and so forth. So they do end up locked up in the prison system. And then the cost of maintaining them in that system is just more and more of a drag on the country.
Yep. And I witnessed a lot of this firsthand. I've lived in eight different countries on four different continents, and four of those countries are actually in Europe. My wife happens to be from Scandinavia, so I spent many years living there, and I watched it happen. The first time I went to Stockholm to visit my would-be wife, this was in 2005. It was still largely Swedish. They had had a wave of immigration from the former Yugoslavia after Yugoslavia was breaking up. But, it was still very Swedish. Everybody spoke Swedish. You would go into a town and it would be dominated by Swedes. And, there would be tourists and stuff. But by the time we sold our house and moved away and severed our ties in 2019, the little town that we lived in, about an hour north of Stockholm, we didn't even recognize it anymore. We it was literally nicknamed Little Mogadishu. It was almost entirely taken over by mostly men from Somalia. It was a very weird situation because normally you'd expect, half and half, men, women, all men, a handful of women wearing, the hijab and everything. But the Swedish government was flying airplanes down to Somalia and Ethiopia and Eritrea and various Middle Eastern countries, Iraq, Syria, and bringing in people as fast as they could. And so I watched this transformation where Sweden went from, a very homogeneous nation where, in fact, one of the things that I thought was so quaint about Sweden is they had this concept of themselves as an extended family, right? Everybody in the country was part of a big Swedish family. That has all but collapsed now. Over a third of the population is foreign. If you go to some of the big cities like Malmo, the majority are foreigners. Arabic is now far more likely to be spoken by students in the government schools than Swedish. And so they're now treating Swedish as a second language, and Arabic is the primary language of instruction. And this is moving forward very rapidly. And it's happening across Europe, right? Germans are the minority in Frankfurt today. Brits are the minority in London today and various other British cities. Dutch are the minority in Amsterdam. Belgians are a very small minority of their own capital city, Brussels. And so this is by design, right? And not only does it bring crime, which Donald Trump addressed, and not only does it bring terrorism, which Donald Trump addressed, but I think the real reason why the globalists are so obsessed with flooding countries with immigrants is because they want to shatter the concept of national identity. And I think for Americans, it's sometimes a little bit harder to understand because our country is sort of unique in that what makes us a nation is kind of the ideas in our Declaration of Independence rather than, say, a shared history and tradition and all this kind of stuff, like maybe the Swedes or the Hungarians or the Zulus might have. But what's happening is that is being completely destroyed. And so you wake up one day and you live in Malmo or you live in Frankfurt or you live in London. You say, I'm surrounded by people who don't speak the same language as me, don't have the same culture as me, not only don't believe what I believe, but hate me for what I believe. And at some point you say, well, why do we have these arbitrary lines on a map? What does it mean to be British or Swedish or Zulu? Why don't we just become Europeans? Or eventually, the end goal is, of course, global citizenship. And if you listen to the UN, they will tell you this. The migration czar for a long time was a guy called Peter Sutherland. He was a bigwig over at Goldman Sachs, managing director, if I'm not mistaken, before becoming the UN migration czar. And he's passed away now. But he said very clearly and very openly in an interview with UN News, which is their official propaganda service, he said, what we're doing here is we are deliberately undermining national identity. He said we need to get rid of what he called old shibboleths, like the idea of borders and national sovereignty, and recognize that we're all one human family, which, we are all one human family. But the reason they want us to think in these terms is because they want to break down national boundaries so that they can have a totalitarian one-world political system. And you can't have that until you have broken down national identities in the nation state. So this is a calculated thing. I was so glad to hear Trump exposing the UN's role in all this. It's even worse than he led on, but I guess he was provocative enough without sticking his finger in their eyes even more.
Yeah. What do you think? I waited to see if he had any applause at the end. And there was actually quite a thunderous applause from the audience. I can't judge it compared to others because I haven't heard enough of those talks. But it sounded like it was people trying to be supportive of what he was saying. So that was interesting.
He is getting support. When in 2018, he was the first one to say, we're not going to participate in the UN Migration Compact. I don't know if you remember, Peter and Ginger, but the UN had this huge agreement that they had negotiated in Morocco called the UN Migration Compact. And what they said was international migration was a human right, and governments were lining up behind it because they were terrified to go against it. And then Donald Trump came out and said, yeah, we're not going to be signing on to this. We're not going to be participating. Every nation state has the right to set its own immigration policy. This is not something that should be handled by the UN. And right after that, it was like dominoes. Hungary, Israel, Chile, Australia, multiple European governments said, we're not participating either. And the thing basically went up in smoke because those are the countries that they're trying to move migrants into, right? So Donald Trump's courage has encouraged a lot of other leaders who otherwise were being cowed by this globalist agenda to stand up and say, you know what, we're not going to put up with this either. Now, if you looked at the camera for people who watched this, you could see some of these people really squirming in their seats, right? Like when he was talking about the drug cartels that Nicolas Maduro was helping to operate, you could see the Venezuelan delegation looking grumpy and kind of squirming in their seats. You could see the Germans getting all fidgety when he was talking about what the European governments were doing to their energy infrastructure, shutting down their industrial capacity. But I think there's a lot of governments in a lot of places that are just waiting for somebody, that have just been waiting for somebody like Donald Trump to create that space where they can come out and say, you know what, we also don't want to lose our country. We also don't want to lose our freedom. We also don't want to lose our self-government. And Trump is right. We should be patriotic. We should not be surrendering our sovereignty to an unaccountable, wicked institution like the United Nations.
Courage begets courage,
Absolutely. Yep, and we're
especially when
watching it
it,
right now.
yeah, exactly, especially when it comes from such a point of strength. And we saw that with the Charlie Kirk Memorial too, where the act of statespeople, statesmen, stateswomen standing up and also talking about their Christian faith. His and Charlie before that, as like by himself, as part of what he felt he absolutely had to communicate to the youth that he talked to so often, that has brought about an incredible, courageous step forward on the part of so many individuals, both well known and never heard from before.
Absolutely. And, I knew Charlie. I worked with him. I spoke at a few of his events. He actually bought hundreds of copies of my book that you were kind enough to endorse, Dr. Bregan, and gave them to any teacher or school board member or even homeschool mom that was interested. And I regarded him as a friend. He was a great American. He was a martyr for the cause of our country and our freedom and his faith. And I think we need to recognize too that Charlie Kirk didn't just give courage to these college students who were terrified of being attacked by Antifa, terrified of being attacked by some, nutty left-wing professor. He gave courage to President Trump. He had a big impact on President Trump, and he didn't always agree with Trump. He would call Trump sometimes and say, "Hey, man, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You shouldn't be doing that." And he was a giant of a man. And I think his impact on Trump and now Trump's impact on the world, I am just so grateful for the legacy that he leaves behind. I know he would have wanted to be here to raise his babies. I know he would have wanted to be here for his wife. But what God is doing through his death is absolutely extraordinary. And I think we should all be grateful. I think a lot of the good things that we're seeing right now in our country would not have happened without Charlie Kirk.
Oh, I
He,
agree.
yep,
He was
so.
very, I only learned on Sunday that he would, because I just wasn't paying enough attention. He was part of the transition team that was involved in consulting for who would be cabinet members and other key individuals in the administration. And that, due to the speeches by those who were there from the administration, he had a profound effect on the shaping of this administration, which has then again had a profound effect on supporting Trump. and supporting the ideas of constitutionalism and freedom and liberty.
Yep. And, Trump didn't say it explicitly yesterday, but Charlie Kirk was critical to him winning this election, and he knew it. Trump knew it. He got millions of young people who either would have stayed home or would have voted for the left out of the funk, out of the morass, and got them involved. I do believe that he was one of the key pieces that won this election for Trump. And he was a huge, huge influence in who Trump chose, including the vice president, including Pete Hegseth, who is a great man. Charlie and I both worked with him on his education documentary for Fox. I encourage people to watch that who haven't seen it. These are great, great people. And, Charlie was one of those rare people who could stand on principle and yet still have this huge platform. And so many of the wins that Donald Trump has secured for America and for the cause of freedom were a direct result of Charlie Kirk's influence. And I think really the speech at the UN needs to be viewed from that lens. I mean, this is still fresh on Trump's mind. And there's a shift happening in this country where it's becoming very clear, who's on what side. There's the side that celebrates the murder of a dad in front of his family for speaking his mind. And then there's the rest of us. And, I think Trump sees that clearly now. So I think this UN speech will go down in history, and I think it's a direct result of the legacy that Charlie leaves behind.
Yes, he gives us all courage. We're at our break point in just a couple of seconds. So this is the Bregan Hour. We air live on Saturdays at 4 p.m. and then repeat the next day, Sunday at 4 p.m. And then the show goes to podcast everywhere after that. And it airs on AmericaOutloud.news. And the founder, a wonderful Malcolm, has made it possible for us to bring this to you. We'll be right back after the break.
Tired of harsh chemical toothpastes that do more harm than good? Upgrade your oral health with Smile, the doctor-formulated toothpaste from the Wellness Company. Smile uses powerful peptides, remineralizers, and probiotics to rebuild gum tissue, strengthen enamel, and keep harmful bacteria away. It also leaves your mouth feeling fresh with a clean mint flavor. No fluoride, no toxins, just real science-backed results. Go to twc.health. /outloud and use code outloud for 20% off your first order.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is XLEAR.com.
Well, I challenge you to find a broader array of great voices, a deeper bench of experience, or a more dedicated collection of passionate patriots than here on AmericaOutloud.news. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. AmericaOutloud.news. Liberty and justice for all.
I've heard Trump really give credit for his victory to Charlie. Apparently, one of the things Charlie did was arrange the coming together of Trump and Bobby Kennedy, which certainly could have been a turning point in the victory, Trump
Yep,
victory.
we noted that at the time, actually. We were thrilled when Bobby threw his hat in the ring for Trump during
That
the
was
buildup.
really a game changer.
That's right.
It's amazing how somebody can come out of nowhere with him and accomplish so much.
Yep.
As just Charlie did, and I vacillate from being inspired to at times feeling ashamed that I didn't do more.
Right. Me too.
You too.
Yeah, he set a very high bar.
Yep.
So it's funny. I guess inspiration is like that, in a way. It's double-edged. But he certainly encourages me to feel optimistic, and he and his whole group. I think that if you folks, if you haven't seen the Fox News coverage of the what was the funeral, but was actually a celebration of his life.
The memorial,
The memorial is
right.
quite extraordinary in many, many ways. Just encouraging sound values like, love your wife and love your husband and take care of your children, and that is really something that's worthwhile and matters and that God approves of. And
Live a clean life, get married, have babies. Do your job and do it with principle and embrace God.
yeah. And we certainly share those values as best we can.
The wonderful thing that I think both of us see, I know you do too, Alex, is how hopeful it is the number of young people who are embracing those kinds of wholesome traditional values that Charlie was able to embody and mentor and demonstrate during his life. It is incredibly hopeful to see that at this point in time, even as the demographics of the numbers of youthful adults who want to get married are crashing, and the numbers who want to have babies are crashing, and the attitudes of so many in their 20s towards the idea of babies is just tragically negative, instead of considering this can be the greatest blessing one might be given in one's lifetime. And the largest responsibility and gift would be that of parenthood and a secure and loving marriage. So to see it all flip, when the Berlin Wall came down, it was like it suddenly came down. There was the Berlin Wall, and it seemed to be in place forever. And East Berlin was just a tragic place to witness. And then all of a sudden, in my view, it was like all of a sudden the Berlin Wall came down. And it opened up this whole new trajectory that even days before I couldn't have imagined in terms of freedom sprouting again in that part of the world. And I feel like this, as tragic as Charlie Kirk's death has been, this is another kind of those pivots from discouragement and from a concept of the country really dying out in terms of birth rate and citizenry, to all of a sudden it's like morning again in America. What a miracle.
It's a nice image, morning again in America.
Yeah. Alex, Peter was saying that you've done a lot to bring morning to America too. You do that every day.
Oh, well, I like to think I'm at least doing my small part with the abilities and the time that God has given me. So I hope I hope people will be inspired to look at the people who have done so much, like Charlie Kirk, like Donald Trump, like both of you, like Robert Kennedy, like so many others. And we're all imperfect in our own ways, but I think we all have a responsibility and an obligation to do what we can to give back and to hand down to the next generation a country that is free and prosperous and honestly in better shape than we got it. So.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to emphasize that not everyone can be a Charlie Kirk. He was born with such a unique task before him, I believe. I think that he was called to do the work that he did with through God. And each of us has the ability to, or we need to take the time to really listen to what we can do and how we can contribute to our family's betterment, to our, especially our wives, husbands, and children's betterment, and how we can improve the country. And I know, Peter, you've often said that you don't know if a man who raises well-moraled, or with fine morals, children, 5 children, or a man who does reform work, which is the more important task before us, because the family is such the bedrock of our liberty and freedom in this world.
Yeah, the family is absolutely indispensable, and that's what Charlie Kirk was teaching young people. As I was driving to the airport yesterday with my now 13-year-old son, we decided to just put on something that Charlie Kirk had done. He was teaching the chapter leaders of his Turning Point chapters about what it means to be a good husband, what it means to be a good wife, what it means to be good parents. And I was just astounded at the wisdom that this young man had. I've got 6 children. I've been doing this since I was 24. He didn't have quite as much experience, but he had more wisdom than almost anybody I can think of, certainly at that age. And he understood that all of the big picture things really start with the small things. It really starts with honoring our husbands, honoring our wives, honoring the family as the critical institution of civilization, the institution that transmits values and culture and faith and knowledge and ideas down to the next generation. And the evildoers have targeted the family relentlessly over a period of over 100 years now. I think people would be shocked to know how much time, energy, and resources have gone into destroying families, convincing wives to leave and disrespect their husbands, convincing husbands to leave and disrespect their wives, convincing children to dishonor their parents. And, if we're going to rebuild from the mess that we're in, it's going to have to begin in homes with moms and dads and children. And Charlie, even though he was so big and so mainstream, he wasn't afraid to just speak honestly about these things either. After he died, I went back and listened to the last long public conversation I had with him. It was an interview we did on my show last summer. And the first thing I asked him was about the threat that our nation was facing. And he didn't even hesitate. He says, this is demonic at its core. We're up against evil. And he was absolutely right. And then I asked him the solution. And he very boldly, you'll never hear politicians talking like this. You'll never hear the big hosts on Fox or CNN talking like this. But he said unapologetically, we have got to give our children a proper education. We need parents to take charge of the education of their children. And he also said the thing that you're not supposed to say, we've got to get the government out of education. This was never really the government's responsibility, and parents need to take back that precious responsibility. So I will always be grateful for the courage he had and for how he encouraged young people to just start small, right? You don't have to be a Charlie Kirk to make an enormously positive impact. Just start small in your own home with your own life, and then your impact can move outward from there.
And also, there's such an emphasis, and I think there needs to be an emphasis on where people pay attention. We tend to look really at the global predators, the one world government that threatens all of us in terms of the concept of it, because it gets turned to evil every time. But on one's day-to-day life, we need to pay attention to local elections. We need to pay attention to our school boards. Now, and Alex, that's one I wanted to share with our listeners. Would you give them the title of your book on the education system and so forth? Because every parent should read that book in order to protect their children against the propaganda that has just been embedded in all publicly related schools at this point in time.
Yeah, thank you, Ginger. So the one that I've been talking about, the one that Charlie bought so many copies of to get out, is called "Indoctrinating Our Children to Death: How Government Schools Are Waging War on Faith, Family, and Freedom, and How to Stop It." So that was the most recent one I did. That came out last year, and that was endorsed by really great Americans like Glenn Beck, Peter Hegseth, the Secretary of War now. And you know, it's just amazing. And what we do is what Charlie did. You know, we explain to parents, this is one of your most urgent tasks, is to make sure your children get a real education. I did one on education about 10 years ago with the great Dr. Sam Blumenfeld, who spent 60 years of his life working on this issue. I honestly learned a lot of what I know about education from him. And I've got one more coming out in January. I'm co-writing with Robert Bortons, who's the CEO of Classical Conversations. It's a great organization. I serve as a senior fellow there. They've educated over 1 million children with classical real education. They've got 135,000 students right now, including my children. And so this is going to be another, I think, really significant book. But the one that Charlie liked and his organization liked so much was Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, Government School's War on Faith, Family, and Freedom, and How to Stop It.
Thank you. Peter?
Faith, Family, and Freedom is battle cries.
Yep. He used to say regularly he was doing it all for God, family, and country in that order, right? And so when the fake media tries to pigeonhole him as a political activist or community organizer, you know, we need to recognize that he was those things. He was unapologetically in favor of using the government to do what the government is supposed to do, which is restrain evil and protect the good. But he also, more importantly, was doing this for his creator. And he was never afraid to say that out loud. That was always his top priority. His next priority was his family. And I think that really should be a model for all of us. Yes, our country is important. We should all want to save it. But even more important than that is our families. And even more important than that is the one who created us and gives us every breath that we take.
Amen. That's right. Okay.
The way I've been thinking about it more and more is the most reliable thing we can do to improve the world is to increase the amount of love in it by becoming a source of greater love. And that usually starts with wife, husband, family, children. God, too, with patriotism is a form of love, all of which, you know, the collectivist world wants to discourage. I think that if God stands there and approves or disapproves or rates us in some way, I think the degree to which we bring love into the world is one of our safest measures to go by. And that starts right there with the people nearest to you and spreads out in a big circle.
I've often envisioned the world as having negative and positive energy. And if you're loving and respectful and kind and thoughtful, that's really, you're putting love, that plus energy, into the world. And it, just saying hello to someone and actually seeing them and meaning it can make somebody's day, let alone doing some small act of kindness as you move through your day, like letting the guy with 3 bits of groceries ahead of you in line at the grocery store, even if you need to get back home. And that, so sharing that kind of respect for humanity and caring makes a huge difference, rather than allowing our own frustrations or distress or whatever be shared and spread around. It can have a very negative effect on others then when you do that. So I've often conducted my life where I just remind myself to always embrace the positive that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so important. And at the memorial service, you know, Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica, gave, I think, one of the most important speeches of American history. And she did some things that probably seem crazy to, you know, normal people, maybe, right? She forgave the murderer mm-hmm. of her husband, which is hard to comprehend. She pointed out that God calls on us to overcome evil with good, that he calls on us to love our enemies and to love those who persecute us. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why Charlie Kirk was so remarkable. There's no shortage of smart people who can go debate crazy, purple-haired, very confused young individuals. You know, there's plenty of people with a brain to do that, but there is a shortage of people who can go and do that and listen respectfully as they hurl nasty accusations at you and then speak back in love in a way that disarms the hatred and in a way that can help bring these people to their senses. And I think that's why he was so effective, and I think that's why he was so dangerous. You know, he could go onto a college campus, and he wouldn't get all of them, but he was getting a lot of them. I think millions of young people today who otherwise would have been extremely confused, extremely miserable, engaged in destructive things, came out of that and came to their senses as a direct result of the kindness and the love that Charlie Kirk and his team showed to them. And that is truly extraordinary. Trump needs to work on it a little bit. You know, if Trump could take any more lessons from Charlie Kirk, that'd be a good one to take.
He went on a slight rant after Erica gave her amazing speech, and he said, "I gotta listen to her. I don't love my enemies. I hate my enemies. I hate them." He said,
yep.
He's obviously having fun with himself and being a person, which is amazing to get from the president. He said he'd try to learn from her, but he was humble about how much he might accomplish in that regard. It really was quite an evening.
Yes, it was.
I think it's a 2-hour listen.
And it's worth every minute. And now we are at our break. So we'll be right back.
I've got two questions for you. Have you been feeling off since COVID? Are you struggling with lingering symptoms? You're not alone. As Dr. Peter McCullough says, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Introducing the wellness company's Spike Detox Trio. This powerful supplement combines nanokinase, bromelain, and turmeric to support your immune system and fight off harmful spike proteins. Nanokinase improves circulation, while bromelain boosts antiviral defenses, and turmeric reduces inflammation. It's not just another supplement. It's a scientifically backed solution to help you bounce back from COVID. Imagine waking up filled with energy, feeling clear-headed and vibrant again. It's possible with Spike Detox Trio. Reclaim your health now by visiting twc.health/outloud and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order right now.
Virus protection and immune boosting just got easier. Enter the Daily V-Stack. Using cellular absorption technology, we put vitamins A, C, D, zinc, and quercetin together with a multi-mineral complex for complete protection. The Daily V-Stack is basically an oral IV of 6 products all in one at an affordable price. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/outloud. Get the Daily V-Stack, protect yourself, boost your immune system, and save 20% on your first order.
Have you been looking for a healthy snack for on the go, but all the energy and protein bars are just too sweet and full of sugar, preservatives, and mystery ingredients? Well, not all energy bars are soft and sugary. Bear Bars are a crunchy, savory bar made from just 6 simple, natural ingredients. They're plant-based, organic, packed with protein and nutrients, and are low-temp dried for a unique crunch. Most energy bars are based on chocolate or fruit and are held together with syrups and sweeteners, but Bear Bars are a delicious combination of veggies, nuts, and seeds. They're a perfect fast snack for hikes, workouts, and busy moms and dads. To learn more, just visit bearbar.com/outloud and get the exclusive discount just for America Out Loud listeners. That's bearbar.com/outloud.
And we're back with the Bregan Hour, which used to be the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, but Peter's wrapping me into it even more fully now, which is really nice. I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for talking me into this, honey. It took him years. He tried to get me to join him on the radio for years, and I kept saying no, but I'm really glad I'm here. And we have our guest. We have our guest, Alex Newman, with us. And we have just had a nice, a really good conversation about Charlie Kirk and his influence. In addition to that, we were starting to talk about the President Trump's presentation to the United Nations today. And I would love, Alex, if you would fill us in more on some of the high points that he touched on. One that I think of, maybe you could give us some details, is his declaration against the bioweapon proliferation in the world. And he acknowledged both that there was bioweapon work that brought a pandemic and a pandemic from foreign labs into our country, referring to COVID. And he called upon countries to apply the treaties that are already present in regards to the creation of bioweapons, which is completely out of control in the in our world.
Yeah. And on an even bigger note, directly related to that, he actually questioned the very reason for the UN to exist, its very raison d'être, right? One of the things he said involving not just the production of these weapons and the proliferation of terrorism and violence. Of course, he called out Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. He talked about the UN ostensibly being founded to help make peace. And he pointed out that they never do, right? He says, in all cases, the United Nations did not try to help. I ended seven wars. I never even received a phone call from the United Nations. What is the purpose of the United Nations? And I don't think people understand how significant that is. The whole justification for this entire machine known as the United Nations is that it's supposedly going to make the world more peaceful, that we're going to have more security. And as Trump pointed out, he just drove a stake right through the heart of this monster by pointing out that they're not even doing the main thing that they were supposedly established to do. Under their watch, wars are proliferating. The UN is helping. He said they're funding an assault on Western countries. And they're not helping on the very things that they're supposed to do, and yet they want to usurp more and more authority. I was there last year for the Summit of the Future, and the whole purpose of that summit was we're expanding the UN, right? UN 1.0, they said, was designed to deal with peace and security. UN 2.0, they said, is going to now handle the environment and the economy and the education of children and artificial intelligence and all this kind of kooky stuff. But as Trump just made very clear, they can't even do the one thing that was assigned to them. Now they want to micromanage our lives. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I think one of the other really critical takeaways from this speech, and Trump made this almost explicit, is that this is not just a difference of ideas. This is not just about, you have one idea, we have another idea, let's discuss which one is better. Trump, I think, very correctly showed that the UN's agenda is actually evil. Their purpose is malign. This is malevolent. It's not just well-intentioned, stupid policies. It is a nefarious agenda. And that came through loud and clear throughout the entire speech. If you listen to the words that Trump was using, here's another quote. He says, he talks about the climate scam. He says, it's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world. He said, if you don't get away from this green scam, your country is going to fail. He says the United Nations is funding an assault on Western countries and their borders. The UN is supporting people that are illegally coming into the United States. So this really is a declaration of war on the UN's very reason for existence. And I think it was one of the most consequential speeches at the UN General Assembly in the entire history of that body. You've got the Chinese saying we're going to turn the communist Chinese, the CCP murdered 100 million of their own people, saying that we need to make the UN General Assembly an emblem of global sovereignty. And here Donald Trump shows up and says, look, you guys can't even do the main thing we gave you to work on, peace. Now you want to fund an assault on our country. You want to promote this massive scam. No, is the simple answer. And it's not just like a typical politician where he just says good things because he knows that's what the voters want to hear. It's what he's doing. He's gotten us out of he's working on getting us out of UNESCO. He's already made the announcement. He's getting us out of the WHO. He's getting us out of the UNRWA, which has, of course, been funding indoctrination for little Arab children to get them to want to wage perpetual jihad on the Jews
Oh
and
my
the West.
gosh.
Oh, it's
The
terrible. It's
UN
terrible.
is funding that too.
Oh, they've been doing it for years. I've written numerous articles in the New American over the years. They have a, they call it the UN Relief and Works Agency, the UNRWA. And over again, these people get caught operating quote unquote schools where they're literally teaching these little Arab children that they need to cleanse the land of Jews from the river to the sea. you know, it's frankly grotesque. And so if they can't even do the one thing that they're supposed to do, keep the peace, rather they're fueling war, how in the world could they be trusted with any other responsibility? So what Trump did here is very profound. I'm sure a lot of thought went into this, right? He didn't just speak off the cuff like he sometimes does at his rallies. I'm sure a lot of advisors were commenting on this. So this was well thought out, and this was a very serious shot across the bow. As we said before we started recording, the one thing, in my opinion, he could have done that would have made it even better is say, and by the way, we're leaving. You're getting no more of our money. If you don't like it, kick rocks. See you later. So maybe that'll be the next step. We can hope.
Yep. Well, then we'd have to ask them to leave our borders, too.
Right. Which would be great.
We
right?
could take the land back. That's
absolutely.
Very, very valuable land in New York City.
Yeah, put it to good use. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize how nefarious it is to have the UN headquarters on our soil. By being forced to have this atrocity on our soil, we have to let in huge numbers of terrorists. We have to let in huge numbers of spies, of disinformation operatives, of subversive operatives working for hostile foreign powers. And they're all here under diplomatic cover. So they can't be arrested. They can't be detained. They can't be questioned. And they have gotten up to so much evil. They're participating in the stirring up of hate and division in this country, and they're doing it all under diplomatic cover. So as far as I'm concerned, the sooner we can kick this thing off of our soil, the better. And I mentioned that I had just gotten back from Texas. I was given a speech there at the Fredericksburg Tea Party fundraiser, the Boots and Barbecue fundraiser. And Charlie Kirk had actually been the keynote speaker 2 years ago, so those were some pretty gigantic shoes to fill. But after I gave my talk, they asked me to please bring up Congressman Chip Roy on the stage. And so we talked for about half an hour. He is the chief sponsor in the House of Representatives of the Defund Act. That's the Disengaging Entirely from the United Nations Debacle Act. And wow. I asked him, yeah, it was a brilliant bill. And it actually does much more than defund, right? It disengages us entirely. It removes our membership in the UN. It removes their spy and terrorist infested headquarters from our soil. It does so much good. And so we talked about why that was such an important thing to do. We talked about the prospects. This is the first time in history where we have a bill in the House and in the Senate to do that. Chip Roy, congressman from Texas, introduced it in the House. Senator Mike Lee introduced it in the Senate. So we have a historic opportunity here now, not just to restrain the UN or reform the UN, but actually to free America from the UN. And that would be excellent news for freedom, for civilization, for national sovereignty, for self-government, for public health, and for every other thing that you can think of, for education. So I do hope that Trump's speech will represent a turning point, for lack of a better term, in our relationship with this atrocious organization. I've called it the Dictators Club for years. And it's about time that we have a serious national conversation about how we want to deal with this thing. And frankly, I'm sick of our tax money being wasted on it.
One of the things I've been seeing bits and pieces about, maybe some in your book, I've been reading his book, folks. It really is good, and I'm learning from it.
Alex's book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the title again?
What's your title, Alex?
So my latest one is Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, Government Schools' War on Faith, Family, and Freedom.
Yeah,
and the one I released before that actually deals a lot with the UN as well. It's called Deep State, the Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. Both of them deal with the UN. The education book focuses on how the UN is using public education to brainwash not just American children, but children around the world. But the Deep State book takes a look at the bigger picture, right? The people who created the UN, Joseph Stalin, a very, very deteriorated FDR, his main agent, Alger Hiss, who, of course, was later arrested and convicted for being a Soviet spy. These people always intended to turn the UN into a totalitarian one-world government. And, you know, when we look at the UN and say, oh, well, wouldn't it be nice if they could just bring countries together for peace? We have to understand that was never the goal. The plan was always, as John Foster Dulles, Secretary of State at the time, admits in his book, War or Peace, the goal was always, as he put it, world government with teeth in it. And that's where they're going. And the only way to stop this freight train is to get serious about not just taking their money away, but removing them from our soil and ending our relationship with them.
Well, Trump may really push that a bit further. because he ridicules the UN so badly in this talk. He talks about how they couldn't even renovate themselves, let alone the
Right.
work.
Yeah, he was very critical of the building when he when
Yeah,
they
their
arrived.
escalator.
When they arrived, they took the escalator and it stopped halfway up. He says, "Good thing we're both in great shape. The first lady's in great shape. We had to walk up." And
is
they
so
fell.
funny.
It stopped so abruptly they fell.
Oh, he said they would have
Or
fallen.
would have
Yeah,
fallen. Yeah.
and then he also, when he started his talk, the prompter wasn't working, the
Teleprompter.
teleprompter,
Yeah.
and that didn't kick in for about 5 minutes. So he criticized that too, and then he did a whole sort of review of how he made an offering. He put in a bid when he was a developer to build the UN building, and it would have had real marble floors if his bid had been accepted. But somebody else's bid was accepted, and it didn't get its marble floors.
And you know what's so funny? Back in 2012, I came to the exact same conclusion. I was down in Rio de Janeiro for the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, and the thing was such a fiasco. Nothing worked. I mean, massive mess everywhere. It was a total disaster. And I wrote a whole article about what a crazy comedic series of absurdities. And my point with that article was, look, they can't even run a conference with infinite amounts of money, and they want to run the world? Give me a break. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Turning Point did a much better job in a
Absolutely. Anybody
very
who ever went
short
to their
amount of
events,
time.
it was incredible on a short, a small budget. I mean, these people did incredible things. Just, put whoever's running Turning Point USA's conferences in charge of the UN conferences. They'll be in good shape. They'll be under budget every time. But that's the nature of government generally, and especially organizations like the UN. Even if they were well-intentioned, which they're not, it's just not an efficient thing to do to have bureaucrats with no vested interest in stuff running people's lives.
Yes. Yes. And plus, you've got all those members who have their own interests, and many of them have ulterior motives also, in addition to any of their declared interests. So it's just a nest of manipulation.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Power centers of all kinds attract the worst people around.
They
It's
do.
one of the problems with humanity
Yep.
that I've been
And
thinking a
you
lot
point that out in
about.
your book. It's so important what you observe in the about the global predators. I mean, they are attracted like flies to fecal matter, right? They see power and they want it. It's the worst among us who want to run other people's lives, unfortunately. And it always ends in disaster.
Well, what else struck you in the speech, Alex?
Well, I think the really significant takeaway is that Donald Trump has taken the gloves off. I mean, the first administration, he was still speaking the truth, but he was trying to be a little bit more careful. He was trying not to be too abrasive, trying not to burn too many bridges. But I think he learned a lot from that first term in office. He learned who he could trust and who he couldn't. If you look at the staffing of this second administration, it is orders of magnitude better. I'll be honest, I'll say I know Michael Waltz was just approved by the Senate to be our representative to the UN. I don't think that was a good choice. That's my
That's
personal opinion.
terrible.
Yeah, Waltz.
Wait, wait. Who's he?
Michael Waltz, he used to be the congressman from Florida. Then Trump made him national security advisor. Thankfully, he fired him, and that was a very good move. So Waltz got a huge demotion. He went from national security advisor, which is one of the top three most powerful positions in the government, to now basically going to babysit the dictators club. I would have preferred to have him removed from the administration entirely. Michael Waltz has connections to the Council on Foreign Relations. He's much more of a neoconservative than kind of a MAGA, Make America First kind of conservative. But even with all that, I think it's very clear that Trump has learned how things really work. And I think that's encouraging. You know, we all know that he made some catastrophic mistakes in his first term. Obviously, the response to COVID being the most significant
The
one,
most,
but one.
with so many deaths as a
Yep.
result from the vaccine.
Yep. Including my dad, right?
I'm sorry, Alex.
Well, I appreciate that. But yeah, his heart literally stopped at 36 hours after taking the Pfizer shot, and they were able to bring him back with the paddles. But his heart was ruined after that. It was 11 or 12 heart attacks. And, you know, that. So what Trump did during the first term, he did a lot of good, but he also was manipulated by very, very evil people. And I think if this speech at the UN showed anything, it's that he now is starting to get it. He now has the courage to say what needs to be said. You know, he's not playing around. Like on the climate thing, the climate thing for me is a huge issue. That's why I go to the climate summits every year. It's such an important justification for the global totalitarian system that they're building. And during his first term, he would kind of flirt, you know, on the campaign trail, he did say this is a hoax, it's a scam. But once he got in office, he said, you know, there's probably better ways to deal with climate change than this. And, you know, he kind of played along with it. This time he just told them to their face, like, look, this is a con. In other words, it's a criminal fraud. It's not just like misguided idealism or, you know, people who have dumb ideas. This is a criminal fraud. And he said it to their faces today like we've never seen before. So I think this is a new and improved Trump, if you will. He's got more courage, more understanding, and he's still not perfect. He's still going to make a lot of mistakes, and he still needs us to be there calling him out when he does wrong. But I'm very encouraged after this speech that we are going to move in a better direction, not just in terms of geopolitics and the international realm, but at every level, including what's happening here in our country. And I'm grateful for that.
Alex Newman, as always, it's just wonderful to visit with you. And I hope your voice just keeps growing and growing. You certainly should be one of those who fill in the empty space left by Kirk's death.
Absolutely. Alex, tell us
Thank you.
where our audience can find you.
Thank you guys both so much. It's a great honor and a privilege to be with you. I so appreciate the work that you guys do. And my website is libertysentinel.org. People can find me there. And then I'm senior editor at The New American Magazine, thenewamerican.com, and senior fellow at Classical Conversations, which is classicalconversations.com. But my personal newsletter goes out twice a week for free, libertysentinel.org. And thank you both again very much.
Thank you, Alex. Good night.